All right. Let's weekend for the week of 6/19/2015.
Yay. That's 19/6/2015 for all you folks in Europe.
Yep. I just completely read that off the screen, so it came out wrong, but yeah, it's been E3. We're drained.
We're all fucked.
We got Lee and Brandon here with me from the Day Zero update. I guess we ought to get started. Brandon, what have you been up to?
Well, why don't you start?
Okay. Well, right now I'm on recovery because we're only a day removed from E3, mm-hmm. and my real life starts again tomorrow night. I go back to work. Yay. Yeah. I need to be ready for that.
God, when Christian gets back, I bet he's just going to be damn well.
Oh, he's going to be thrashed, I'm sure.
Yeah. If he wants to go into his bedroom and not come out for a couple of days, I will perfectly understand that.
Yeah. Hockey season's over, so I'm already looking ahead at the NHL draft and the coming season. Also, I finally got around to watching Kamen Rider Drive from last weekend, and they picked a really nasty way to go into its annual golf week off that it takes every year. Toei needs to do something about this shit because they need to stop. They do something to where the golf break does not come during the second half of the series.
Yeah.
Because it's just wham episode after wham episode after wham episode. And you always end up going into that week off on a cliffhanger, and it sucks.
Shit, man. Yeah. Try being a Game of Thrones fan right now. I got to wait a year for this bullshit.
I can imagine.
In Japan, they've got manga magazines that are dedicated entirely to golf.
Yeah, it doesn't really surprise me.
Yeah. Like, you know who Kazuo Koike is?
No.
He's the guy who wrote Lone Wolf and Cub. Crying Freeman.
Oh. Yeah, I know who he is.
Yeah. He actually started a golf magazine, and he's been writing comics since the late 60s, and like almost a third of his output is actually golf comics.
That's actually kind of awesome.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I haven't even had a chance to – I haven't had a chance to read any manga in a long time. I just recently, like a couple months back, got the last issue or the last book of Blade of the Immortal, but I haven't had time to read like the last seven of them. So,
Oh, dude, I got to tell you about this one.
Ruin it. God damn it.
No, I'm not going to tell you about that.
I'm literally going to binge read it when I have a weekend.
Yeah,
because the art is so good.
Oh yeah, the name of the guy, what's his name? The artist.
I'm drawing a complete blank right now.
Yeah, but I mean, he does some awesome stuff. I mean, he's an incredible artist.
Yeah, he is.
But there's this other manga I got to tell you about. Have you ever heard of a manga called World War Blue?
No.
Okay, I actually talk. Okay, here's imagine a manga that is basically a sort of fantasy RPG version of the console wars in the early 90s. And every character in this manga represents a particular popular franchise in Japan that was popular in gaming. The main sort of quote unquote enemy empire in the game is called the Nintendo Empire. And their leader looks just like Mario.
Of course.
He even has a little raptor pet. Okay, quite technically he looks more like Joseph Stalin, but, you know, Mario. Yeah. And, you know, Luigi is his brother, is his advisor. One of his enforcers is a samurai who's basically a takeoff Link. But there's another... the protagonist group is called, hold on, I'm going to look this up on Wikipedia, but it's basically based off of Sega. And obviously one of their main characters is supposed to be based off of Sonic.
Naturally.
And he's a shirtless dude with blue hair who runs really, really fast. The Segawa Kingdom, that's what it's called. And the character is his name is Gear, And, yeah, he represents Sonic the Hedgehog. One of his best friends is based off of Tails. And I think he dies, like, in the first chapter. And there's a character called Opal, who's based off of Opa Opa from Fantasy Zone. And there's, and the thing is, part of the whole thing in the manga is that they go to war with some of these smaller little empires. Like, they got one empire that's based off of Data East, and their main...
Okay, that's cool.
Their main leader is basically Karnov.
Fitting.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Who, and the thing is...
I gotta look into this shit.
And, well, you can go to Wikipedia, look at World War Blue. But the thing is, Karnov is really obsessed with eating dried mushrooms. And the reason is because one of Data East's side businesses was selling dried mushrooms. and there's also a mercenary in the game named Tejerov. And guess what game he's based off of? Tetris.
Okay,
he's a sorcerer.
Naturally.
Let's see. Yeah. I'm on
the Wikipedia page. What the actual fuck am I looking at?
Yep, you see the little blue guy there?
Yeah.
That's supposed to be Gear. He's based off of Sonic. See the guy up in the right corner? That's the leader of the Nintendo Empire.
Okay.
Only problem, of course, is they don't show the M on his forehead. And the guy over on the left, that's Tejerov. And I'm pretty sure that the girl with the purple hair is Nell, and she's based off of Phantasy Star 2.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So if you get a chance, you got to read this. It's
Awesome. There's an anime series too?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to have to look into this.
Yeah, there's only like 3 episodes though.
Oh yeah. Okay, I just caught that part.
Yeah.
So it's an OVA.
Yeah, they've got like
still
5
ongoing. That's cool.
Yeah. 5, I think like up to like 5 of the volumes are available in English. So from, I can't remember who publishes them, but yeah, if you get a chance, you got to read it. It's a hoot. Especially because they really go into detail. The plot really goes into detail on how it's based on sort of the business stuff that was going on behind the scenes during that time.
Well, it's definitely a different take than Hyperdimension Neptunia.
Yeah. Okay. But, okay, I guess you're done with your...
Well, no, I was just going to add to that. I don't want to spoil too much from this week's Kamen Rider Drive, but in short, they go into the week off with Shinosuke finding out exactly what happened to his father, and I'm not going to say who the guilty party was, but they left it at that cliffhanger going into the final probably 15 or so episodes. And yeah, so the guy that we thought was going to be the big bad got killed last week, of course, and the series has just completely seen an overhaul in sort of the power balance among the various groups that are forming. It's hard to speak of this in abstract terms, but. Oh. I wish they had done this last week, honestly.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Brandon, go ahead.
Okay. Well, my primary gaming stuff has been taken up, obviously, by The Witcher 3, which I think I'm actually getting a good way into it now. Obviously, I still love it. Also, because of the recent... announcement of Star Fox Zero, I decided I had to go back and start replaying Star Fox Adventures again.
Yeah.
I've said before, the game is definitely not perfect, and it has its flaws, but it's got serious nostalgia appeal for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's got probably one of my favorite soundtracks of any game ever. It's just really tribal and has a tropical sort of African world music touch to it. It's just really awesome. And also, you know, it introduced us to Crystal, which is one of my favorite gaming characters of all time. Even if they just sort of reduced her to a damsel in distress in what the game eventually became, instead of, you know, a secondary character like she was originally supposed to be. But But, you know, I got, one of the things I realized about that game is that some of those puzzles could be really obtuse. Like, I remember the first time I came up to the Stone Gate. Do you remember the Stone Gate? It was the big...
Vaguely.
Rock giant guy with the Scottish... It was Shrek, basically. You know, nobody ever gives me gifts anymore. That guy.
Vaguely.
And the thing was, you had to go to... And the thing is, it took me a long time to figure out, but you had to go to... over to the market and get that piece of rock candy to give to him, and he'd take you over to Krizoa Palace and all this stuff. You know, and obviously the biggest thing about this game that I hate is the end boss fight with Andross, because it's such a freaking cop out. It has nothing to do with the story. There's nothing hinting at it at all that he was involved in some way. It was just sort of they just threw him at the very end just to justify it being a Star Fox game.
Yeah. Because it didn't start out as one.
No, it started out as something else. But, that's one of the things I've been doing. Something else I did recently, I went and got the DVD of... because I decided I wanted to go relive some of my childhood. So I went and got the DVD for Disney's Robin Hood. And that movie was one of my favorite movies as a kid, and it still kind of is. But I don't know if you ever noticed, they recycled a lot of animation from some older Disney movies from that.
Yeah, like, Disney was notorious for that on a lot of their films.
Yeah,
which is kind of weird considering they're renowned as being world-class animators.
Yeah, well, the thing was, they were going, if what I remember correctly, they were in one of their financial downturns at the time. And they needed to get a film out into theater so they could recoup some of their money. So what they ended up doing was they ended up taking a lot of animation from some of like their older movies, especially, I mean, hell, they basically took a couple of characters from the Jungle Book and plopped them right in there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, Little John was Baloo. And, the advisor to King John was Ka, the snake. And, they did the same thing with the Sword and the Stone as well. But it's a really good movie. I went on IMDb. Yeah, the Internet Film Database. I did not know that there were so many young girls who had a crush on Robin. Just did not know that. Okay. I get why. I mean, he's charismatic and he's got a... His Brian Bedford, his voice actor, did a really good job with him. But, whatever. Let's see. Also, I started reading Ken Liu's The Grace of Kings. I need to sort of describe, sort of understand. One of my favorite books that came out recently was a science fiction novel called The Three Body Problem by a Chinese author named Xi Jian Liu. And, Ken Liu was actually the translator of that particular book. He's a really great writer in his own right, but that was actually my first exposure to his work. And The Three Body Problem is, here's the thing, I love science fiction, but hard science fiction can be completely lost on me unless you've got a really good writer who can explain really complicated concepts to a complete idiot like me.
Yeah.
And he actually took a really... complex physical and astronomical concept and actually made it really easy to understand. Like, do you guys know what the actual three body problem is?
No.
Okay. You know how any object in space has its own gravitational pull, be it a planet or a star or whatever? Well, basically, imagine you've got in this case, it was three large stars that you would arrange in a triangle. Now imagine that there's a planet in the middle of all three of those in the middle of that triangle. But because there's these three large stars with a stronger gravitational pull than that planet has, it basically gets pulled every which way and its orbit is really erratic. That's the three body problem.
Okay.
And the thing is, the whole point about the three-body problem is it's about this... It's actually the three-body problem is a trilogy, so only the first volume has actually been released so far. I don't think the next volume comes out until next month. But the idea is, obviously, it's a Chinese author, so it's mostly set in China. And this particular book takes a lot of it takes place during and immediately after the Cultural Revolution, which I don't know how much you know about Chinese history, but that was the thing that happened in the 60s. It pretty much turned the entire country into chaos, and all these various political factions were basically in a whole hardcore civil war with each other. And it was a mess. It turned the whole country upside down. And the idea is that one of the main characters in this is a woman who sees her father killed during one of these, what they used to call struggle sessions, which is when they would take a person whom, you know, the Red Guards had declared a reactionary, and then they would, you know, take him forward. It was basically kind of like a show trial, basically. Yeah. And anyway, so she eventually happens is that she grows up, she becomes an astronomer, and then she has to go during sort of what there was a thing that happened afterwards called the up to the mountains and down to the hills campaign, where all the old intellectual Mao forced all the old intellectuals to go and work with the peasants for a while.
Yeah,
and he decides that, and while she's there, she ends up getting recruited to this secret Mao-era scientific project that's trying to find messages from space. And at one point, she actually manages to find one, and she actually sends a message back. But, of course, the thing is, this is hard sci-fi, so if you know anything about how time dilation and stuff works, you know, it's a long distance. So when they finally get a response back, it's years later. And during this time, they find out that there's sort of this sort of underground movement that's begun as a support of these aliens, because they want the aliens to come and take over because they've just given up all hope on humanity.
Yeah.
And one of the things that these guys do is they create an online game called Three Body. And the idea is to try and translate to people who are playing the game in terms they understand what life is like for these particular aliens, what they're called Trisolarians, because remember, they're a planet in between three suns, so trisolar. And, you know, the idea is they want to sort of introduce the Trisolarians to them and sort of their ideas. It gets kind of complicated, but it's just a really great book. And anyway, this was my first thing of getting into Ken Liu. And so he released The Grace of Kings, which is his first novel. And any guys ever seen that movie, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
Yes.
Okay. Imagine Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon crossed with Game of Thrones. And that's what The Grace of Kings is.
Huh.
Yeah. You know, it's really heavily influenced by the, you know, Romance of the Three Kingdoms and that type of stuff. But, you know, it takes place in sort of a fantastical Chinese world. It's what he calls silk punk. So, you know, there's also, you know, guys with like, there's like kite soldiers and huge airships draped with curtains and, you know, gods and goddesses getting involved and stuff. It's just really awesome. You got to read it at some point. And last thing, I'm just saying this just so I can kind of lord this over Patrick. I've been watching my Sonic Sad AM DVD.
Nice.
All right, you know what I'm talking about when I mean Sonic Sad AM, don't you, Lee?
Nope.
The Sonic the Hedgehog Saturday morning cartoon.
Oh, yeah, my son's a big fan of that.
Not the one with the where he gives the PSAs and stuff at the end, but the other one.
Sonic Underground?
No.
No.
There were two Sonic cartoons going on in the same time in the early 90s. One was kind of syndicated on weekday mornings, and then the other one was on Saturday morning on ABC.
That's the one with Princess Sally and Rotor and Bunny Rabbit and all of them. Kind of cyberpunkish. You didn't watch it?
No. Nope.
Man, you're missing out.
Yeah, it was definitely the better of the two.
Oh, yeah. Actual effort. And, you know, it came out around the same as the Sonic comic books are coming out, which, by the way, are still going on 20 years later.
Yep.
And it's just awesome. I love it. Nah, 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 nah. But that's been me.
Lee, what have you been up to?
Oh, I'm just living the dream.
I hear that.
No, I just I watched, you know, I had the E3 press conferences up while I was working, and I've been playing a little bit of The Witcher and, you know, logging into WoW every once in a while. And I actually had a Q&A last weekend. I'm surprised the community over there didn't crucify somebody.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so there's been this big uproar, right? Like in WoW, every expansion since the Burning Crusade, you've been able to get to fly, right? Mm-hmm. And the big thing going on now with WoW is they came out a couple of weeks ago and they said, we don't think we're going to have flying in the game anymore, period.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Whoa.
And, yeah.
That's bullshit.
And so, well, because here's what happened. At the beginning of this expansion, they came out and they said, they basically came out and said, we're going to do flying, but it's not going to be in the initial patch. It's going to be in patch 6.1. So everybody's like, all right, fine. And they were like, you know, the big reason we want to do this is because we want people to explore the world, blah, 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 blah. We want, you know, basically we want people to see all the work that we put into this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after that, you know, on the next patch, we'll enable flying. It'll be all good. Well, that changed from, okay, it's not coming in 6.1 to it's coming in 6.2. And so people started to get more frustrated. Then a couple of weeks back, they did an article, they did an interview with Polygon, where they basically just said, yeah, you know how we said there's going to be flying? Yeah, we're not going to put that in Warlords of Draenor, and I don't think we're going to do it in any expansion going forward. And so the community just erupted. I have not seen this sort of negativity vented on anyone. I'm sure I could probably find something in the past that could be comparable, but I mean, it's been crazy. I mean, we're talking like their forums have been on fire. The WoW forums have been on fire. Their subreddit's been on fire. And what's interesting is that there's a large chunk of people that don't seem to care either way. They're like, I like it being on the ground. It makes it feel more dangerous and stuff. And basically every excuse and every reason that Blizzard gave as to why they were going to get, you know, why they were going to do it this way sort of kind of just fell flat on its face. And I don't think they would have had the backlash that they did if people weren't so upset with this expansion in general. It's the lightest expansion they've ever done. There's a lot of there's a lot of stuff, frankly, that's missing and stuff that they promised. And the expansion in a lot of ways really feels compromised. And so, of course, you know, like one of the things that's been happening is it feels like there's been sort of this trend in WoW since the end of Mists of Pandaria. And even for, you know, going further back than that, where they're taking out more stuff than people really think that they should. And so then this sort of thing, like with flight going away, just makes it 300 times worse. And so they ended up actually doing this Q&A. And in the Q&A, they basically said, yeah, we're going to let you guys have flying, but you have to do a bunch of stuff to it. Because the way it used to work is you just got to max level, you paid some gold, and you could fly. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's you have to have completed the Lore Master achievement for Draenor, which means that you had to have done the story sections for every part of the expansion. And you know what? That's actually, if this had been years ago, I would have had a huge problem with that. But the leveling from 90 to 100 is by far the best thing about Warlords of Draenor. It's pretty flawless. It's fun. It doesn't get boring. The stories and the interactions and stuff that you do with the world around you is really neat. But it just sort of falls apart from there. And there's been such a lack of content to do. So they did this Q&A where I think the Q&A was basically just damage control because they were getting beat up so bad. And everybody was kind of like joyous, like, oh yeah, they're finally giving us flying. But the thing is that like you have to do so much for it. You have to grind. Like the whole reason so many people have been mad is because there's not enough stuff to do that's fun in the game, particularly when you're at max level, right? Well, now their excuse is, well, we're going to give you your max level flying stuff, but you have to jump through hoops to get it. You have to do all this story stuff. Then we have this new area coming up in the 6.2 patch where you're going to have to go out and grind a reputation for a month. And so it really just kind of feels like, to me at least, I was given a chores list. And to get something that for the last four expansions, I've never had an issue getting. Right? It was always just pay the fucking money and all this stuff. And they really have unfortunately really sectioned that game into people that raid. And then if you don't raid, you shouldn't be playing this. And It's a damn shame. Like it's really, cause like, you know, I know we had talked in the past, Pat, about WoW getting, put into the Video Game Hall of Fame. WoW is a phenomenal game, but the team behind it right now, I don't know. Like one of the things that I've talked about before is wondering, like, you know, not so much has Blizzard lost their touch, but have they lost enough people that what made Blizzard Blizzard isn't really there anymore? Like, you know, I think it was last year Rob Pardo left, and he was one of the head game designers on every big game they've ever had. The last big thing he did was Hearthstone, and he left, and then recently they had another guy leave, and for the life of me, I cannot think of his name. But he was one of the guys that was in charge of the intellectual property and making sure that they were going sort of like in the right direction. And he went over to the guys, the company, what is it, Ready at Dawn, that did the Order 1866, and the God of War games. He went over to be their CEO. So, you know, it's a pretty big step up for him. He was like a creative director or something. I don't know. I'm probably completely getting this wrong. I read about it and I just cannot think straight. But, you know, and like it feels like the people that they have in charge have this really narrow idea of how they think people should be playing. And if that doesn't, if you're not falling into that mode, frankly, the game's not really worth your time at this moment. And it the damage control from it really feels to me the same way that the damage control felt with Diablo 3, where, because I don't know, I sometimes wonder how Blizzard gets their information, right? Because, like, the guy that's the lead designer right now, I'm sure is still being raked over the coals after the fact that they lost 3 million customers. You know, like, they said it on their, oh, God. They said it on one of their conference calls where they said the 3 million sub drop was expected. Like, it was on one of their on one of their stockholder calls. Of course, they're going to say that on the stockholder call. But the reason a big chunk, I'm willing to bet, that those 3 million people left is because there wasn't enough stuff to do after you hit 100.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they've produced an expansion that's lighter than everything else that they've ever produced. And they're taking away things from people that people, frankly, are used to. And it's just kind of crazy.
And I have to ask, why do you think they're taking out all these big chunks of the game to begin with?
It's not some of it are definitely bigger chunks. It's not like they're just removing sections of the game. But part of it is that Blizzard seems to sort of be in this mindset to where they're like, we want people to see the stuff that we've created, which I understand that. Like the way that it used to be is particularly with rating content, was that like 10% of the population would see it. But I'm sure it was probably something like 50 or at least 40% of the resources was going to like dungeons and raids. So they sort of shifted gears when Cataclysm came around to making it to where people could see everything that they created, because they started putting the story beats and the raids and everything else like that. Like honestly, if you didn't raid like during Burning Crusade, you wouldn't have any idea what the actual story of the Burning Crusade was, because so much of it was told through questing that led into raiding. And then they sort of switched out of that mode with Wrath of the Lich King, because you'd see Arthas all over Northrend and stuff like that up until when you raided and killed his ass. And then Cataclysm, you know, did the same thing. Mists of Pandaria did it really well. There were story beats all the way through. And Warlords has like failed on that front. I think that's the big reason they're taking that stuff away. And I really think it's detrimental. Like, one of the things that people are still screaming about is that it used to be pretty much every class had some sort of class quest. And you would get those class quests at different times. Like, for instance, it was Hunters. Hunters would have a class quest like at level 10 or 11. It was level 10 to go get your first pet and learn how to train them and do that stuff. Warriors would get a class quest that started at like level 20. And then I think it could go through roughly about level 30 or 35, where it taught you a new stance. And then you had to get these components to make your own weapon. And if you had friends that could help you, you could get the weapon really, really early, like at level 30, and you could pretty much carry it till almost level 40 because it was so good. Paladins had a class quest to get their holy charger, their horse. Warlocks had a class quest to get their not only their horse, but also like their demons and stuff like that. Whereas now, like if you're a hunter, you start out with a pet at the very beginning. When you're a warrior, you get all the battle stances immediately. When you're a paladin, by the time you hit level 20 and you're able to get a mount, you get the paladin's charger for free. And they removed all that stuff in Cataclysm. And it's essentially, they started sort of homogenizing the classes. And I think that that's really hurt them, because the whole point of you having a different class than somebody else is really like the choice. It's the reason you chose, whatever your reason is for choosing that character, whatever your reason is for sticking with it, you know, whether you like the way it plays or you like what it represents or whatever. When you start homogenizing that stuff to where, you know, everybody has a self heal, everybody can do this thing and do that thing, you know, you sort of kind of weaken the game and weaken the, because MMOs are different. People attach identities to their characters. And, you know, when you're playing, you know, if you're doing a specific quest that's just designed for your class, that's going to make you feel like you're actually part of that. Like, I remember when I did my warrior quest to get my stance, like it had me rolling all over the Eastern Kingdoms, and I ended up on this island where they had a bunch of guys in a circle that was basically like Fight Club. you know, and they removed that outright because they redesigned the old world back when they produced Cataclysm, which was their third expansion. And that's just kind of what they've done. They've just taken out all the stuff that really makes it interesting, and they've catered towards this raiding crowd that for whatever reason absolutely has to be told 100% of the time that they're special little flowers. Yeah. Like it's crazy, because like if you get on the forums, you'll see people that are like, no, I want the armor set that I got to be just fucking rare. And if somebody else can get it by going through the looking for raid tool, and even though it's just a different color, it's somehow infringing on the fact that I put in this work to get this thing. And it's so ridiculous. And the what's different is before this, before they had the new lead designer that they have, his name is like Ian Hazakostas or something. Before this, there was a lot more to do than just raiding. But Ian Hazakostas was a hardcore raider. He was one of the main guys over at Elitist Jerks, which is the main theory crafting site for World of Warcraft. So if you have a guy that's that deep into it, he's going to design a game that rewards raiders and really rewards no one else. And like, to his credit, like, the encounters and the boss fights in this expansion are phenomenal. Everything else sucks. And you could see that because it's like, if you put the guy that loves to raid in charge of the way he thinks the game should go, the one thing that raiders want is they want the stuff that they get to be limited time only, and then nobody else can get it. So he started doing that, started putting more of that shit in the game. It used to be you'd have to go out into the world and farm mats. Well, now you have a garrison where you can just basically get mats in your garrison. So you're not spending time out in the world. You can just get what you need from your garrison and go fucking raid. Like, it's crazy. It's just literally just shoveling, you know, kind of like funneling everyone into the same thing. And that's boring. And that's why people are leaving. Because if you're not doing that one thing, there's no reason for you to be playing the game.
And now I suddenly get a better idea of why Square Enix was making such a big deal out of flying mounts at E3, for Heaven's Ward.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It seemed like a really weird feature for them to be making this huge deal out of, but if that's what's going on over in WoW, and suddenly...
Well, I can't think of another MMO where you can fly. Because you can't do it in Star Wars. You can't do it in Lord of the Rings. You can't do it... Well, I guess you can do it now in Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Could you do it in Final Fantasy XI?
Nothing that I play. I mean, there were airships, but that was just to get you from town to town quicker. I don't. If there were flying mounts, I sure didn't play long enough to get to them.
Right. Yeah, I think that's been a big thing that has been unique to WoW. But yeah, they're fucking up bad. And their Q&A was sort of damage control for that. And what I found so interesting was the way the community reacted, because everyone's like, oh my god, it's so great, Blizzard, listen to us. Like, wait a minute, they're grudgingly giving us something back because people complain. They still don't think that we should be playing that way. They still don't think that we should have flying. And basically, they're giving it to you after you've done everything that you would need to do out in the world, so you wouldn't want to fly over in any goddamn way. So, and the worst part of it is they're giving you that chores list of things to do, and they're not really addressing why the world is boring and why people have problems with it. Instead, now they're just putting the carrot at the end of the stick and going, well, we know a bunch of you have a problem with the content we produce, and we know a bunch of you think it sucks, and we know a bunch of you think it's unfun, but now we're going to put flying at the end of it. So get to it. And instead of designing stuff that would actually make people want to go do those quests, they're just going, here, go get it done, and then you'll get flying at the end. Yeah. And it's just really ridiculous, and it really flies in the face of the way that Blizzard used to work.
Yeah.
It just really makes me wonder, after what happened with Diablo 3 and then now this, like, I never thought I'd say it, but this is one of those things where I'm like, I would buy a Blizzard product the day it comes out. I've bought them ever since I played the first Warcraft. And I'm sort of at the mindset now of, like, even though whatever their next expansion might be, it might just be kind of wait and see, because I don't trust them anymore. Like, they still don't feel as slimy or as shady as, like, an EA or somebody like that. But, I mean, like the only reason they're giving people flying is because they lost 3 million subs. And some of those people, I'm sure, were because of flying. But now what they're going to do is they're going to go, oh, well, see, we gave you what you wanted. You wanted flying. Here's what you have to do to get it. And so these idiots are like, oh my god, I'm so happy Blizzard finally made a compromise. No, if they did it the way it worked in the last four expansions, you just hit level cap and you do it. But for whatever reason, they're so convinced that you have to run all over the ground and do all this other shit. And what's worse is that Warlords of Draenors, actual ground transport modes, like when you're on your mounts, and its layout is horrible. Mists of Pandaria was super fun to fucking ride across because it was laid out really well. Warlords is not. It feels like you're constantly running into the edge of a mountain or something like that that's preventing you from being able to travel beyond where they wanted you to. Like, it's a very controlled experience. Where, and that was the other thing. WoW never used to be that way. It really just kind of could be what you made of it. You went out and you did your thing. If you wanted to craft, you could craft. If you wanted to, you know, play the auction house, you could play the auction house. But with the garrison, there's no reason to craft and there's no reason to go play the auction house because you get everything you need from the damn garrison, which goes back to the whole point that this was all designed by a raider. Raiders used to bitch about having to go out into the world and farm stuff. Well, now they don't have to. They can log in, go to their garrison, which you stay at 90% of the time anyway. Get all the crap you need, make your potions, go jump into a raid, and call it a day. So, yeah. And I've been working.
Yeah, we know.
Oh.
It's the human condition, brother.
Yeah. I did watch E3, though, and I got to tell you, I'm overall, I actually didn't really enjoy the show at all.
Yeah, that's actually a good segue, because the first segment after what we're up to is, now that E3 is over, how are we feeling about the direction of the industry?
Well, I think the industry is sound, but what's interesting to me now is that I was really excited about E3 when I was watching it, but as I watched it longer and longer and longer, I got sort of, I don't want to say disillusioned because that's not the right word, but it was just kind of like more of like, so this is it? And I think part of it for me came from watching that Tomb Raider demo that they did. Like,
that was so full of nope for me as an acrophobic. I mean, that whole mountain was just a great big right. No sign.
See, and I'm fine with that, but I think what's interesting to me now, at least as far as the way that I'm looking at it, like, honestly, the thing that got me geeked up the most was watching that little sizzle reel from Devolver Digital. Like, I really, those guys, I feel like, back really interesting games and help that stuff come to market. And particularly just because of that niche that they're in, their games, because they, I mean, they look like, you know, they look okay for what they are, but compared to something else, yeah, they look like shit. But that, but when you pair that with the way their games work and the way that they play, I mean, the gameplay is all there. And I think that was why I really enjoyed that part and knowing that there's going to be some cool shit by them that I can play, because like Tomb Raider will probably be a great game. The reboot was great, but
yeah,
I don't have a lot of interest anymore in playing these, like, really what is tantamount to a wannabe movie. That doesn't do anything for me anymore. I don't want to go through this like controlled thing so you can show me how much money you put into the graphics.
Yeah.
Or, you know, look at how cool this ice looks. Like, that's wonderful for the vertical slice that you're showing at E3, but I think I'm moving past that kind of game now. Like, I want to be able to get into it, explore, and do the kind of things that I want and still get something out of the experience instead of, here, we're going to put you through this completely arbitrarily controlled experience and hope it's a good time for you. Like Uncharted demo looked fantastic, right? Mm-hmm. But like, did you notice? And I know the guy played it. I know he was actually playing it. But you notice he didn't run into anything? When does that ever happen when you're actually playing something like that? With the trial and error of, oh, shit, I had to make that left?
Yeah.
You know, and so like when you're trying to play those sort of tightly controlled experiences that are supposed to feel cinematic, for me, they just usually end up being frustrating. There's very few of those where I felt like, oh, that is so cool. That's completely kind of gotten me into what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
I don't really feel that way a lot now when it comes to that stuff. So I look at that shit as more of a hindrance than anything else. And practically everything that they showed, it felt like at E3 that year, had these piloted segments that are supposed to be cinematic. And I don't want that in my games for the most part. And I would wager that a lot of other people feel the same way as me, because that's why you have the AAA market space shrinking the way that it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I started seeing a lot of that stuff, I kind of just tuned out. Even with Nintendo. Like, Nintendo's in that weird transitional period because we know they're working on NX. They're not going to drop it, you know, at E3 this year because they want to make sure they have a strong last holiday for the Wii U and maybe the 3DS. But all I could think about when I was watching their stuff, with the exception of a couple of titles, was, didn't we see all this shit in 2013? Like, and so it really felt disingenuous Reggie.
The Please Understand.
Yeah. Well, and it felt really disingenuous for Reggie to come out and be like, yeah, if you notice, we're showing you games that you're going to be able to play like this year or the first part of 2016. It's like, asshole, I've been seeing these since 2013. Like, you're not showing me anything new. So, except for weird shit like that new Metroid game that obviously no one wants, in place of what we could actually get. I mean, I thought the new Zelda, the 3D one, same thing. That's got to be a fucking stopgap measure for them for whatever the Zelda game is going to be on the NX, if the NX is that hybrid portable that we've been talking about. So it's like, here's a bunch of old assets from a link to whatever. Fuck, I can't even think straight now.
A Link Between Worlds.
Here's some assets from that. Make another game out of it. Like, it's readily apparent how little Nintendo has, at least right now, for 2016 and beyond. You know, I think we're going to see the NX next year, and I think it'll probably launch next Christmas. Because, Whoa. Yeah. They are. Here's the thing. If they wait too much longer, if they try to launch the NX in 2017, by 2020, they're going to be behind the eight ball of hardware again when you have the PS5 and the Xbox 2, I guess, coming out. I don't think this console cycle is going to be as long as the last one.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Wow.
And I think it's going to. I think this will be that one that both Microsoft and Sony got under their belts with the x86 architecture and pretty much off the shelf parts. And I think they're going to move forward from that. So yeah, Gary, I'm putting it down right now. 2019, we'll see new consoles from them and they'll be launched in 2020. That's why I made that joke on Facebook about Final Fantasy VII Remake. Like, you motherfuckers need to get on it. Because if you're as slow as you have been in the last year, this is going to come out on the PlayStation 7. But that was the other thing that bothered me, too, is that... So, like, last year, I was really hyped when I saw the CGI for Crackdown. Because I loved the first Crackdown. The first Crackdown was great. The first Crackdown was that perfect sort of gaming surprise where you got... Pretty much everybody bought the shit... Because it had the Halo 5 demo. But then when they played it, they were like, this is a great game. Like, this is great. And so, you know, I think there's something there for that, you know, that franchise to come back. And, like, I think in terms of, like, showing, I think it's a bad thing, at least for me, that the most exciting part of everything that I saw was that Xbox 360 games, you're going to be able to vote for which ones are backwards compatible. That was the big thing for Eve, not the Final Fantasy announcement. I mean, I got hyped about it in the moment, but that was about it. Like, looking at it in the future, or not in the future, but looking at it a couple of days after the conference has me going, but when am I actually going to play this game? You know?
And I was guessing it'd be 2017 for the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, I think so too. But yeah, like, just thinking about it that way, like, and that's what I felt like with a bunch of the games. Like, all this stuff that you're showing us is 2016. Obviously not everything, but, you know, I'm being, you know, broad with it. But it's I guess I just don't want to know about it.
Well, you remember the rules of E3 special, and we talked about the Project Cafe rule?
Yeah.
There were a lot of violations of that at E3 this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although most of them, and strangely enough, very few of them were from Nintendo themselves.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of looking at this from a different angle. There's a sort of messaging going on that seems consistent among the press conferences. It's not that it's not just about the fact that it's going to be a while before we're playing a lot of this stuff, but what they're announcing, by and large, is pretty different from what we've usually come to expect from E3. And to that point, I walked away from E3 for the first time in years feeling like my own personal tastes were actually being catered to for once. And
it really felt kind of like a throwback E3 in a lot of ways. But I think that's the other thing, though. Like, even though it did feel like it was a throwback E3, at the same time, like, going back to what I was talking about with Blizzard, I also have to really consider that even if some of this stuff is throwback, the people that made these games great probably aren't even working on them anymore. Like, I did see Final Fantasy VII,
we know for a fact that they're not working there anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So, so you look at that, and then, like, even with Crackdown, who knows what fucking team's even working on that, and if it'll be, you know, it'll be something that's worth playing. I mean, look at what happened with Halo 4. I mean, Halo 4 had some good things about it, but for the most part, it was roundly rejected by the community because it really strayed from the things that made Halo great. And now we have that same company making Halo 5. I'm not going to buy that at launch, especially not after what happened with Master Chief Collection. Get the fuck out of here with that shit. I mean, oh, Assassin's Creed, look at that. They have top hats. That's not the exact same fucking game I've been playing for the last 5 years. Oh, look at that. Ubisoft has more games where you can shoot people. Okay, great. Oh, look at that. Fucking Nintendo is announcing the same shit that we heard about for the last 2 years, with the exception of this Metroid game that nobody gives a fuck about. Oh, you know, like, it's just shit like that over and over and over. Like, oh, Microsoft actually might be trying to pull some shit out. Okay, that HoloLens, I will say that HoloLens demo was cool. But just overall, it was just kind of like having stepped away from it and not being in the moment where you were super excited, like, this is where everything is going. Like, yeah, and I've been to E3 before. I've been to E3 when it was here in Atlanta. Like,
those were some good years.
Yeah, like, or even, like, look, like, for me, the biggest thing that blew my fucking mind was the Square Enix conference. Like, everybody knows I love Dragon Quest, and I think that Square should stop fucking around, and they should localize 7, and they should localize 8.
Yeah.
Fine, you don't want to do that? Whatever. I don't like buying your games anyway. But be that as it may, when I look at, like, the stuff at the conference, they might as well have named themselves, changed the name from Square Enix to fucking Square Eidos, because the stuff that Eidos put out was far more interesting than anything Square did, at least as far as I could tell. Like, Kingdom Hearts looks great, but Kingdom Hearts would have been awesome 10 years ago when we actually expected it to show up. And I think that's sort of like where I'm at, like, simply because my time and my tastes and everything else have changed. Like, so here I am looking at these games that I would love to play, and my thought process goes, all right, am I going to have time for this, number one? And then number two, if I am, is it going to be worth my time? Like, I find myself nowadays with games, like I was talking about The Witcher before we got on the call. Sometimes even just trying to get from one place to another can be fucking overwhelming because of how much stuff there is to do in the game. Like, oh, yeah. I need to stop. I need to pick this. I need to kill this person. I need to do this. I need to do that. Like, to the point where it's exhausting. And I think that's probably, again, going back to what I said about Devolver Digital. I mean, you know, that's probably why I'm looking forward to, like, that kind of stuff and the indie stuff, because at least I know it'll get right to the fucking point.
Yes.
And I'll be able to play some shit rather than this simulated cinematic experience that every fucking AAA game designer has a fucking hard on for. I don't understand it.
I think at this point we can just happily sit back and watch that entire branch of the industry eat itself.
Well, and the thing is that it wouldn't even be that bad. It wouldn't even be that bad. Like, I don't have any issue with that stuff existing. The problem is that it's the same thing that we're seeing year after year after year. I mean, that's sort of like where it comes in for me. Like, hell, even with Arkham Knight coming up, I'm excited for it. I'll tell you know what I'd have been a lot more excited for, though? I'd be a lot more excited for it if they didn't do Arkham Origins, which everybody knew was a fucking cash-in to make sure that there was more money to actually produce Arkham Knight. Like, that fatigue is real.
Yeah.
With any of these games. And the only people that it's not real with are the ones, like, that are buying the Call of Duties or the FIFAs and everything else like that. And the only reason they're doing that is because they don't play anything else anyway.
Yeah. That's one thing I was happy about. We didn't get Call of Duty shoved in our face every 3 seconds this year.
Nope, that didn't happen.
But yeah.
There were a couple of gems that did show up.
But yeah, we kind of went over the milk carton last night on the E3 wrap up.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Hang on. Before we move away from it, I'm sorry, not to interrupt, but let me ask you guys real quick. Shenmue 3, what do you think?
I'm all on board. I'm completely on board. And that was one of those things you were just talking about, how we weren't sure whether the teams that made the games great are still working on them. Yu Suzuki seems to be doing a really good job of keeping the core of his team intact, and I was really impressed about that.
Well, the reason I'm asking because I actually thought it was really shitty what Sony and him did. Like, it was obvious. I mean, Pat, you and I were talking about that the minute we knew it got announced.
Yeah.
I was like, I bet you somebody else is going to pick up the tab for this. Because, like, the reason I thought that is because I can add. And I remember reading back in the day where the big problem with Shenmue and Sega in general, like, Yu Suzuki really did that company no favors by producing that game because it cost like $50 million. And I remember sitting there looking at that Kickstarter goal and going, how the fuck is he going to make this game with $2 million?
Like, well, a lot of that money was pissed away on assets games. They never used and things like that.
Yeah, but even still, like, they'd have to have, like, a Square Enix fucking pile of assets lying around, which we know they don't. And so that's why I was sitting there thinking about it. Like, somebody's obviously going to pick up the tab for this, and this is going to be to really gauge interest. And I think that that's an interesting thing to do, but I don't know.
Like, well, I think it was a kind of a precondition of Shenmue 3 ever happening under any conditions.
Right.
The term I've been throwing around lately, pretty much since this got announced, was that crowdfunding is the only petition that matters. And this proves it.
Well, and I think that's the part of this that's interesting, because on one hand, like, I think crowdfunding has its place, right? Yeah. I think it's important, particularly because, you know, again, like what we've talked about on these shows so much, is that the middle of the games industry fell out. It was either you were doing, you know, a $10 game or you were doing a $60 one, and there was nothing in between.
Yeah.
And so I feel like Kickstarters and these indie projects have sort of brought that middle back. But what I'm seeing now, especially because Sony did this, is that I would not be surprised if these creators, particularly these Japanese creators, that these bigger companies don't seem to believe in their games anymore, this is going to be what they do. And that's going to be how they get backers from these big corporations to get these games done. So, like, look at Shenmue, look at
Bloodstained.
Yeah, Bloodstained. You know, I guararantee you the next creator
Bloodstained was the same way. It was not going to pull in enough on Kickstarter to actually make the game, and all of a sudden here's Deep Silver.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so that's the thing I think we're going to start seeing. And on one hand, I think that'll be great if that brings a lot more of these mid-tier titles, or to bring back these older school games that still have a place in the industry. But the only problem, my big concern, is that this is an industry as well that has shown it has no breaks when it comes to milking things.
Yeah.
And that worries me, because I wonder if this would be the kind of thing where we have wanted these kinds of titles back for so long that we end up getting them removed from the industry anyway, because now instead of backing these AAA games, you have these publishers packing these indie titles, and they still expect some gigantic return on investment that these titles wouldn't produce anyway.
Hmm.
Because even if you look at like the Bloodstained starter, I think the average person, like the way it averaged out, was like $82 a backer, basically.
Which is obscene for any Kickstarter project.
And it's absolutely insane. But the thing is that, you know, we know for years the game industry has wanted to fucking raise prices anyway. So part of me feels like this is another way where you're going to get those folks that are locked in, they're going to be the ones backing these projects. But then I feel like we're sort of still in the same problem because, or still in the same situation with the same problem, because let's say like Shenmue got its $2 million, and let's say Sega or Sony rather pumps in another $40 million. Well, they know they had enough to get $2-4 million from fans,
yeah.
But that also doesn't translate into regular sales. So I see this being a kind of thing where one of these companies gets burned once or twice and it'll never be used again. And I'm wondering what that will do as well to the kind of games that we've been talking about that we want to play, because part of me thinks that some of these budgets these guys are asking for, I mean, we've seen it on other Kickstarter projects where the budgets just aren't realistic. And they don't plan for that.
Yeah.
So, but you know, it also could be, you know, that it is a double-edged sword. It could also lead to some really, really fantastic things. But
I think for right now, we're just watching, at least in the short term, the potential power of crowdfunding when combined with a little beefier backing to kind of be that holy grail, and we can start seeing some of those previously unmovable mountains in the game industry start to budge.
Yeah.
And but even if all we get out of this is Bloodstained and Shenmue 3, I think we came out pretty good.
No, I agree with you. I definitely agree with you. But I do wonder, though, since, you know, again, this industry has been one of those that's been plagued by people that are demanding completely unreasonable returns. I'm just waiting for that to happen to one of these. Where it's like, what if somebody goes, well, how come Bloodstained didn't sell 8 million copies? We backed it, and this is ridiculous. Like, well, you should have never thought it would sell that much any fucking way. What's wrong with you? You know?
I think that's – well, Deep Silver in particular, I don't think they're built that way. They're the kind of publisher, they like being niche. And so I don't think – I suspect that's why they why Igarashi and Inafune have kind of gravitated toward them. And Inafune said something interesting about Deep Silver, said they're going to be a very good publisher. They kind of know their place. They just invest the money that's needed and let the games be awesome. And they don't, there's no expectations of editorial control or ridiculous publishing demands or anything. They're there to be facilitators. And
well, I hope that's the case, because I think particularly, I imagine this is probably a pretty vexing issue, particularly for the Japanese, because a lot of these big creators for them aren't with these big companies anymore.
Yeah.
And it seems like a lot of those places don't fuck. Look at what happened to Kojima. A lot of these publishers don't feel like there's a place for the Kojimas and the Inafunes and everybody else like that, and, you know, the Masunos. So this is going to be the route that they're going. And what's interesting is that it feels like it's still going to lead back around to getting that backing anyway. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at one point if Capcom ends up backing an Inafune project, and he's not going to say no.
No.
Not if it'll get him the money.
Yeah, before Deep Silver stepped in, he was completely open to the idea of Capcom being the publisher for Mighty No. 9.
Yeah, so, and that kind of thing just makes me wonder, like, and then at that point, if you have them back in bed with the same people that didn't want to make those games in the first place, what happens? Because even if you have the Kickstarter and backers, if you have all those people, what happens if the publishers don't want to go through with it?
Yeah.
When some milestone doesn't get hit, like, what are the repercussions for that? That is what I think is going to be interesting, particularly in light with there was some game I was reading about a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was about a week ago, where the backers are basically waiting to sue the Kickstarter creator, and they actually went to the FCC about it. And I think they claimed, like, false advertising. I'd have to look at the article again. It's late. I'm tired. But
I think I know what project it is you're talking about.
I think you do, too.
And that's crazy, because he was just like, and like a bunch of people think that he basically took the guy that did the project, took the money so he could move.
Ran.
And yeah, and he dipped out. And like, so that's the same kind of shit. Like, that was the first one where it was really bad. So you have to wonder what's going to happen in the future with some of this stuff. Like, so if these backers don't get the game that they promised, is Capcom or you know, Sony going to give them their money back? Like, that's the kind of stuff that I'm wondering about. And then the other part of this, the Kickstarter thing that I feel is so important, is that you have people paying money for this sort of agreed upon vision. And I think that, that people that back these Kickstarters also believe that when they're backing them, that the product that they get is going to be uncompromised. And the minute you have these suits involved, the same ones that wouldn't give people like Igarashi the money to make another Capcom or another Castlevania game, and the people that wouldn't give Yu Suzuki the money to make another Shenmue game, what happens when they're back in control of the purse swings? I think we're going to end up in the same place. And that really scares me, because it really felt like Kickstarter was the way for us to get these kinds of games going forward.
I don't think it'll destroy the system. I just think it'll send it back to the drawing board for another round of fine tuning. And
yeah,
you know, it's not, this isn't something that's going to go away that easily, I don't think.
But all that being said, like I said, there were some real gems that came out of E3.
Oh yeah.
One of the ones that really, to me, was that trailer, that new trailer they showed us for Xenoblade Cross.
Oh, yes. I need that game in my veins.
Did you see that, Patrick?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. What about you, Lee?
Yeah, I saw it. That's one of those games that I'll probably do the loving from afar, where it's like, oh, this is cool. When am I going to have time to do this shit?
Yeah.
You know? But of course, it does have off TV play, so I could.
Yeah, because it's a Wii U game, so
yeah. But yeah, I mean, as long as it's something that's interesting that I can get into and really just kind of play it the way that I want, I'll be cool. Now, you know, being a little bit older and having the family and stuff, there's nothing that pisses me off more than padding. Like to this day. The Call of Duty, the first Modern Warfare, has the best single-player campaign of any shooter I've ever played, simply because there is no fat whatsoever.
Nope.
Every single thing that you do is fucking crazy. It's like playing a Michael Bay fucking movie. And it works because it's so bombastic. It's really a lot of fun. And it's probably 8 hours at max.
Yeah.
But there's no padding to it. There's no fat.
It respects your time. It's like 100.
It does. It respects your time completely. It's 100% adrenaline, and it is so fun. And, you know, we talked about this on the other shows, too. Like, you know, if I get into a game, I want to be able to start playing it. I don't want to have to sit through 5 hours of tutorials.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's some of the stuff that I saw makes me excited. But at the same time, I do wonder with – you know, how how Xenoblade, the first one, was, how much time I'll be able to put into that game to sort of get to the point.
Yeah.
You know? But I am still looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, for God's sakes, there was these big spaceship battles and freaking, you know, you can ride around in mechs that can turn into planes, and you can have, like, air battles and just big giant enemies and stuff. It's just, God damn it, I need this game in my life.
Yes,
and I need it now.
I'm looking at Nintendo's lineup. I see Super Mario Maker, Xenoblade Chronicles, possibly Star Fox Zero if they can get the controls figured out.
Yeah.
And Fast Racing Neo that we talked about a lot yesterday.
Yeah.
And I've still somehow got to work in games like Trails in the Sky SC and Trails of Cold Steel.
Yeah.
This is going to be one of my big gaming years, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I've said, you know, I'll definitely be playing Star Fox Zero, you know, either way.
I'm tuned on the controls.
Yeah, because I love Star Fox, and I, you know, other than the weird controls, what they showed looked pretty awesome.
Yeah. If they can get the controls in order, the game looks fantastic.
Yeah. What about that abortion of a Metroid game?
Yeah, we're not talking about that.
I do think...
What abortion of a Metroid game? I didn't hear anything about any Metroid game. Did you hear anything about any Metroid game?
Yeah, I think... I mean, it's certainly not going to be something I end up playing, but I also find some of the overreactions to it to be quite comical.
I thought the petition was a little
overblown. Yeah, that was over the top.
Just don't buy the fucking thing. But at the same time, it's one of those things where it's hard not to feel like, damn, Nintendo, that's really a contemptuous thing to do to your audience.
Yeah. And then there was, I saw a post on Tumblr a little while ago that implied that the trailer should be posted up to Pornhub under Hot Blonde Fuck by Japanese Men. And so,
well, if the shoe fits.
But no, I mean, that was Metroid M. That was Other M.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll tell you, actually, the out of all the newer games that I saw, at least from Nintendo, the one that I'm most excited for is Mario Tennis, simply because I love all the Mario sports titles. To this day, I wish they'd bring out another Mario Golf on the an actual console. Because, I mean,
Wii U would be a good one for it, too.
It would be. And we still play at my house Mario Golf on the GameCube. Like, there's Nintendo, I love their arcade-y sports games. So I'm looking forward to Mario Tennis just because of that. But it looks like the gimmick is you can get big.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. But, you know, just give me something interesting to do and I'll be there.
That's also this year, too, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that I care about Yoshi's World anymore, so because I've seen
Yoshi's Woolly World.
I'm in.
It looks great, though. I mean, I really dig the graphical style.
I'm glad they're making Yoshi's Island sequels again.
Yeah, agreed.
Between Yoshi's New Island and now Yoshi's Woolly World.
I really just wish they would do, if they're going to revisit concepts, I would love to see a Super Mario World 2.
Oh.
Like, done in that in the Super Mario World vein. Not the new Super Mario Brothers vein or anything else like that. Like, one of the things, I was listening to the Retronauts podcast a couple of weeks back, and they did a Super Mario World episode. And I think it was Jeremy Parrish that said this, but they said something along the lines of, like, it says a lot that Nintendo's next foray into, like, the Mario game genre after Super Mario Land was Yoshi's Island. Like, yeah. And they were like, you know, they bucked the trend of what they did in the 8-bit days, which was, you know, you had Super Mario 1, then you had the lost levels, and then you had Super Mario 3. Like, Super Mario 3, yeah, introduced some cool concepts, but it was really just a refinement of what they did with you know, Super Mario 1. Whereas Super Mario World was sort of like, here's all this Mario stuff, but we want you to explore every nook and cranny. We want you to do all this stuff. Let's see if you can really get into what we've placed here for you to find.
That was where a lot of the linearity just went right out the fucking window.
Yeah, and it was so much fun. It still to this day is my favorite Mario game. And but I would love to see a Super Mario World 2 in that same vein. Like,
yes,
I don't want to see the new Super Mario Brothers 12. Or whatever it is. Like,
well, I'd be down with that too, but
yeah. I heard somewhere they actually, that at one time they were actually working on a Super Mario World 2.
That would be neat if they're gonna be revisiting, you know, this.
Yeah,
stuff.
Wait, well, it was like shortly after the original game came out.
Yeah.
And in fact,
yeah, I'm sure you'll see, like, several iterations of it once Super Mario Maker comes out.
Yeah.
Then you'll have all the
that
Super Mario
That is true. I did like
with.
Seeing that it went from just being the 8-bit Maker to having, you know, all those other options. I think that is
yeah,
really
you get
cool.
to do Classic, 3, World, and New.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably the best way to go about it.
I agree, and it's such an intriguing concept. I don't get into level editing, but I know a lot of people do. Actually, you know what? I got to say this. I thought the coolest part of really any of the E3 conferences was seeing Shigeru Miyamoto in those old notes for Mario 1. Like,
how
I had
much
no
do you
idea.
Think those notes are worth?
Oh, my God. Like, they need to come out
those
with
papers.
A fucking
got listed on eBay somewhere. How, I mean, this is museum shit.
Yeah, exactly. I wish they would produce like a design works book.
It took me a minute when they first brought him out to realize what it was, when I realized what was on those papers. Like, holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
These are priceless.
That's something they should put in the freaking, like, Smithsonian or something.
Well, it was just crazy to me to learn, like, to see how they did it on graph paper. And then all of a sudden it was like, now the block placement and everything that you did makes perfect sense. Like,
and you also realize just how much work they actually put into that first game.
Well, and that was one of those things I've always kind of wondered how they designed levels, because, I mean, between all the Mario games, we've played thousands of levels.
Yeah.
And I don't really think of many of them as being derivative of one another. So just thinking about, like, I mean, they basically use that graph paper, like to storyboard the levels. And I just think that's fascinating. Brilliant. And it is brilliant. It's something I would never even think about. Like, and then, you know, it's like, how does this flow? How does this work? Like, that was the coolest part of E3 for me, just seeing that.
And I talked about this on a recent show too, but I want to bring this up with you because I wonder if it had the same effect. During the pre-E3 thing, during Nintendo World Championships and everything, they were doing this huge Mario Maker exhibition. Mm-hmm. And there was just this picture that came out of that. And it was Miyamoto demoing Super Mario Maker to a couple of kids who happened to be on hand.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there, holy shit. This is the guy who made Mario teaching the next generation how to make Mario.
Yeah. Yep.
And I hope to... Oh. I hope this stays with them their whole fucking lives, because that
that part is totally cool. You know, the craziest thing is, as much as I bag on Nintendo, and I do it a lot, because I think they make a lot of stupid fucking mistakes. I also don't want to see an industry where they do not exist. Agreed. There is something about that company where I really feel like they're at the forefront of everything they want to do. Is they want things to be fun. Yeah. And I really feel like you can't say that about a lot of other developers. The other developers are saying stuff like, oh, this is going to look so cool, or this is going to elicit this kind of response. Whereas I think at Nintendo, the core is this game fun to play? And yes. I don't want to see an industry where they don't exist to do something like that.
They are a very important voice in that regard.
Right.
In gaming.
And that's why I think it bothers me so much when they do stupid shit that alienates their own player base.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm hoping with what we know they're working on in the future that they kind of move into the 21st century, because I don't want to see an industry. I don't want to see a world without Nintendo. I mean, there's so many kids' lives who are fundamentally changed by an Italian plumber, you know, who goes.
There's a whole generation of people who, you know, when they think of a gaming console, they immediately call it playing Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. My wife, even though she is a gamer, she'll fucking wander around the house humming the first level tune from Super Mario Brothers.
Like, it's timeless.
It is. It's crazy. And, like, I think that's the other part of, like, Nintendo doing what they've been doing and why it feels so stupid to me, because they haven't reached out to cultivate that group of kids in the way that they did with us. And I don't know if it's because they don't have the ideas of how to catch on, or if it's because overall the age of the average gamer has gone up. But the thing is if you look at anybody, I don't know anybody right now who is our age that if they were plopped in front of a good Mario game would go, oh, I don't want to play this. Like, and like, you, whenever you see those arguments where people are like, oh, Nintendo should keep up, you know, they should get with the times and stuff like that. Well, A, I think they're right. But B, I think what's interesting about that is that if Nintendo was to compete on the same level as like Sony or Microsoft, and they were able to get third parties back behind them again, mm-hmm. their next system could be what the PlayStation 2 was and sell 150 million consoles, because mm-hmm. they're Their games are good enough to make people buy the hardware, knowing there won't be anything else out that they want to play until Nintendo decides to produce the next title that they have for their console. Like, that's insane. Nobody is going, well, if I don't get, you know, Halo 5, I'm not buying an Xbox One. I'm sure there are some people that were hardcore into Halo anyway, but they're probably already gone because of how bad 343 fucked up Halo 4. But nobody goes...
I think you can attribute that as part of, only part of PS4's success.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, nobody at Nintendo is going, well, like, here's this cool monetization scheme that we've been able to work into the game. You know?
Yeah.
We put all this bullshit in the world that these people can collect because we know there are some people out there that are OCD for it. And you know what? Maybe it'll pad out their gameplay experience 3 to 4 extra hours, and then this will feel like it was a good value. Like, I don't ever come away from playing a Nintendo game feeling like I got ripped off.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Ever.
Like, ever, ever. And that's another reason why I don't want to see an industry where they don't exist. And that's why it's so frustrating they keep making the stupid-ass mistakes that they're making. I mean, fuck, they could probably fucking finance the new console on Amiibo sales alone.
Yeah. And they've still got that.
Let's not get into that again.
Well, before they start tapping into their Amiibo money, they first got to get through their Wii money, and that's still years off too.
Yeah,
they could probably the amount of Wii money they got could probably buy a small country in Africa.
Oh yeah,
and just run it however they wanted to.
Yeah, I'm just hoping, you know. I'm really hoping that the next thing that they produce is really, it really kind of hits that itch that I think everybody wants. Like, I was looking at like 3DS sales data before E3 and shit like that, and I thought it was absolutely fascinating how much. I'm sorry. I completely forgot what I was saying because I've been running WoW while we've been talking. and no, I just got a mount to drop that I have been trying to get to drop for 4.5 years.
Congrats.
Holy shit.
Fuck yeah.
Dude, fucking yes. Okay, so anyway.
Maybe you should play during the podcast more often.
Oh my god. Well, it's this dungeon. I'm so overleveled for it. Like, if things hit me, they die. So, holy shit. I'm about to text a buddy of mine that I work with. He had it years ago when we started playing together. And anytime we were out in the world, he'd always mount on a fucking thing to piss me off. Oh my god, I think I might call him after the podcast and tell him to suck my dick. Anyway, but yeah, to back to what we were talking about with Nintendo, like, I want to see them successful, and I really hope that, I don't like this idea that people kind of bring about where they say, oh, well, Nintendo can't compete with Sony and with Microsoft, so they're just not going to try. That's horse shit. I was there during the fucking Super Nintendo. Nintendo could do that shit. Why they don't want to might be the better question as to why they're not doing it. But,
well, I mean, we saw the trailer for, you know, the stuff for Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that they did that on Wii U.
Yeah.
On Wii U technology.
Still didn't think that was a Wii U game at first.
Yeah. But I don't know why they were.
They're just, you know, they're one of those companies that's set in their ways, and that's fine. But, you know, I always wonder, too, like, if being set in their ways sort of has been the thing that's really screwed them. And, you know, it's hard to believe that that's not what's happening. So I want to see them fully recover. And I think the other thing that's really hurting them is that I think they expected this to be a really like a big runaway hit, and the Wii U particularly. But even like I was thinking about my Dragon Quest problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Part of me believes that half the reason that Square doesn't want to put that shit out and Nintendo won't back it is because, you know, again, like, you remember, what was it, 2 weeks ago we were on the podcast and I was talking about the new 3DS, like, how shitty the sales have to be for Xenoblade. Simply because, you know, there's such a small amount of people that have that. Like, and then I started looking at, like, the year-to-date figures or the, you know, the lifetime-to-date figures on the 3DS and how much lower they are than the DS. Like, I think Square and other people like them, I think we would see that Dragon Quest translation if there were 150 million possible customers rather than, like, 40.
Yeah.
You know? And that makes me wonder too, because again, like, I get more into the business side of things now than anything else. And that's the kind of thing that I look at now and I'm like, huh, because the games that we enjoy are going to be hindered by this in the future. Yeah. So even the fact that Xenoblade Chronicles is coming out or whatever X, whatever the fuck it's called, I think is a good sign. But what bugs me about it is that it's coming out on a system probably where a whole bunch of people aren't going to be able to appreciate it simply because what they've only sold, like, what, 9 million Wii U's?
Something like that.
Like, that's so terrible. Like, it's bad that one of your consoles has been outsold by one of your games.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's fucking crazy. So... Yeah, they really need to spring back. And I think that they're going to double down. I think that all the rumors that we've seen about their next console being a hybrid, I think makes the most sense because they're still killing it on the handhelds, just not nearly as, you know, the way they used to.
Yeah.
Hang on, I'm texting this guy. Suck my balls, asshole. Finally got it.
But I guess that should lead us to the next segment, which was what do we think, how do we see our gaming purchases being through over the next year?
So many RPGs.
Yeah.
So many RPGs. I mean, I've got...
I can't even tell you what I'm going to buy this year.
I just know that Trails in the Sky, SC, and Trails of Cold Steel... are going to be dominating my time. Xenoblade Chronicles X, we were just talking about. That'll be in there. Next year, there's Fire Emblem Fates, which I'll be all over.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because Awakening was so good.
Yeah.
God, I remember driving around to find a copy of Awakening.
Like, yeah.
Places were having trouble keeping it.
I just lucked out because I happened to be working at Walmart in the electronics department when we got a shipment of three copies in.
Yeah. I drove to a Walmart at like fucking 11 o'clock at night, probably like 20 miles from my house, and in an area of town that's a little more redneck. So I knew those motherfuckers weren't playing, what is this gay Japanese shit? Where's my fucking Madden? Like, so I knew they didn't have the copy. Sure enough,
oh, God. You went to a Walmart late at night?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. You know, I didn't want to cut off one on a sort of go off on another direction from what we were talking about. But my God, the Walmart after around midnight turns into a sea of freaks.
I should know. I work at one.
Yeah.
Well, I used to work at one.
Yeah, I'm an overnight cashier to this day, so. But it's nice. That's the only time I'm willing to be there. Because, and this is what I tell everybody, at night you just get maybe the people who partied a little too hard and aren't sure what town they're in.
Yeah.
And I've taken to answering that with Calgary. But during the day, especially during the rush hours, you get people who, you know, they don't want to be there. They're shopping because they have to. They frustrate themselves while shopping from just completely unnecessary hurrying, and, you know, they've pissed themselves off, and by the time they get to the cashier, they just want somebody to take it all out on.
Yep. I worked at the deli department.
Nice.
Yeah. And the thing
my
is...
My favorite story... Sorry, I just gotta finish this one.
Cold cuts for that ass, bitch.
My favorite story is still some kid was down here partying with some of his friends from out of state, and they thought it would be a really cute idea to just get him extremely high and then ditch him at the store. So he just, you know, comes up to my register, stoned out of his mind. Is there a courtesy phone here I can use? No, but we got the payphone over there. Looks into his wallet for a second. Oh, crap. Just goes over there for like 10 minutes, is staring at the payphone, trying to figure out a way he can game a free call out of it. Goes off somewhere for a minute, comes back with like two huge cases of Twinkies, puts it on a debit card because he didn't have cash. I guess that was the problem. And I guess he just went out and ate those in the parking lot until he fell asleep. Still one of my favorite stories, being an overnight cashier.
Yeah, but the real question is, did he buy Fire Emblem before he left?
No.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. As far as my sort of, my, yeah, like I said, I used to work at the deli department, and, I'm guessing, does the deli department over at your Walmart also make fresh food as well? Hot like wings what? And stuff like that?
Like what?
Like chicken wings and stuff like that? Yeah, I had to do that too. Unfortunately, I also worked at the ratty-ass Walmart in Central Georgia.
I don't like where this is going.
Yeah, we had a fryer that was like a decade old. And unlike modern fryers where, you know, they had a hose that would go outside of the building to a tanker truck outside to collect all the grease, we had to wheel out this old rusty contraption from the back to pump the grease into, then wheel it halfway around the store, which, by the way, this thing was rusty, it was old, it had a wheel that was stuck.
This is really making me uncomfortable.
Wheel it over to this big tank to collect the grease, and a lot of times it was just full.
Yeah.
On top of that, we also
had
the fryer
all manner of interesting flora and fauna, kind of.
Yeah, we had fryer baskets that were really old and frayed and threatened to break at any moment, which, you know, this is hot grease we're talking about.
Yeah.
So. We had the freezer had a big crack in the threshold that on my first working day, while I was trying to put stock in there, I actually tripped on and nearly got myself crushed by all the boxes. And then, of course, there was also the fact that we lacked, you know, things like gloves to use to get the hot rotisserie chicken out of the rotisserie. So we had to get them out with the regular spandex gloves.
Oh,
well, they were still hot. Fuck. We tried to use tongs for a while, but management didn't like that because it would tear little pieces out of the chicken.
Oh my God.
I lasted at that job for about a year and a half. And then finally I just said, fuck it.
Yeah. I can't blame you.
Something else about Walmart. You ever notice that weird cult of personality they have around Sam Walton?
A little bit, yeah. Doesn't seem to be as pronounced as it used to be, but it's still there.
You know, yeah, I used to go over there, and you'd go to like the human resources department in their room, and they'd have like it would be a really bare room except for like a portrait of Sam Walton in the back. And then you go into like the employee lounge, and like all the employee magazine quotes him all the time. And
okay, it still does that.
And you know, all the posters have his face on it and quote for him, and all the awards that they give to their employees have their face on. And I'm like, damn, Joseph Stalin would envy this guy.
It's true,
but yeah, it's a straight up cult. I used to call it the Church of Sam Walton because that's exactly what it was. But anyway, getting back to our other, as far as what I'm seeing, You've probably already mentioned some of the games I was already looking forward to. You know, I definitely look forward to the new Fire Emblem, and you know, other game I'm looking forward to is, you know, the Metal Gear Solid 5. You know, it is Kojima's swan song on the series, and
based on the E3 trailer, he is intent on pissing away as much of Konami's money as possible on the way out.
Yep, pretty much. And frankly, I don't blame him.
Yeah.
I mean, I would pretty much torch the franchise and run if I could.
Blank check, you say?
Yeah. And, you know, just because, obviously, Kojima is one of my favorite designers, even though he hasn't, sometimes he's isn't quite as good in getting his ideas across as some. You know, hell, I even liked Metal Gear Solid 4, even though it was, in many ways, a movie with occasional gameplay.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, it was a still pretty good movie.
Well, like a movie franchise, if you're going on content.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to see where he goes with this. The fact that he's taking the stealth gameplay and putting it in an open world environment.
That's bananas. Real,
yeah. That actually kind of intrigues me, but also frightens me. Because that means, you know, I mean,
there's anybody that can pull it off, it sounds.
It's true.
Yeah.
That's what I was about to say.
And I've had a bunch of friends who've told me that, and a lot of other websites that have said that if you're going to play this, it's probably a good idea to play Ground Zeroes a couple of times, because that game is sort of meant to be kind of like practice.
It's meant to train you.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a lot, you know, being that it's an open world game but still very much a stealth game, there's a bunch of additional challenges that's going to go along with it.
And didn't Kojima say that from the beginning?
Yeah. And I guess he sort of wants you to, he's like, this is, you know, if you're going to play it, this is, yeah. And, you know, it looks like it still looks really cool, and I am really interested in the way the story-wise this is going to go, because I don't know if any of y'all noticed, but somehow Paz from Peace Walker somehow is still alive, and I'm not sure how that works.
Clones.
Yeah, that's probably the case.
Clones.
Speaking of which, the trailer also seems to show that we might actually see Solid and Liquid Snake in this particular installment. And also, I just want to know where they're going with Quiet, because I don't know if you've heard recently, but Quiet's design in particular has been getting a lot of controversy.
And didn't Kojima say that it was very purposeful?
Yeah, he said that there's a reason why she looks like that, not
she probably has a dick.
You know, people have actually said that she's actually Chico from Ground Zeroes, but they actually said that's not true. He said there's a reason why she's so exposed like that, and he said once you find out why, you're actually going to feel very ashamed of yourself.
Yep, she's got a penis.
But I just want to know where they're going with that character. I love the Metal Gear Solid series.
Yeah, I
know that.
Too.
The Metal Gear Solid, the first one, freaking blew my mind when I played it. As it blew everyone's mind.
Yeah. See, I haven't played since Metal Gear Solid 2, but I can definitely respect the work that's being put into it.
And, you know, Kojima really is one of my favorite developers ever. Because he has that sort of mind, like, in some ways, kind of like a great novelist.
Yeah.
And also, like, a wannabe filmmaker. But he can also make some pretty solid gameplay at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a very rare developer that can make a really cinematic video game that's also really fun to play.
I agree.
Also, I am looking forward to Uncharted 4, because obviously the trailer that we saw, it looked kind of linear and staged, but I do love the Uncharted series, and the one thing with the Uncharted games is the combat has always been kind of iffy, but everything else, like the traversal elements and the puzzles and stuff, are just really cool. It's just really fun, and you know, I've actually kind of
they're really well made games. They're actually one of the few cinematic games that I feel are really worth their time, worth the time to play.
And they've actually put a lot of input of effort into making these characters someone you actually care about.
Yep.
Like, you actually do grow attached to Nathan and Scully and Sully into Sully and, you know, all the others. Because, you know, they're just well written, you know. And, you know, I'm wanting for that. And obviously the new Tomb Raider, because the Tomb Raider reboot was one of my favorite games of the last generation. And
let me ask you a question about that, because I'm looking forward to that too. But one of the things that turned me off about the first game was how much she got beat the fuck up.
You was talking about how they kind of get her all beat up and everything.
They got her beat up. And here's the thing, and I'm not saying that from the sense of like, oh, she's a woman, she shouldn't get fucking beat up and bloody. It's
this
not
is some Mortal
that.
Kombat shit that happens.
It's that it was so gratuitous, and she sounded like she was in so much pain. Then it was just kind of like, it was almost sort of
fetishistic.
Like torture porn. Yeah, like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
I don't actually think that was their intention. It just sort of...
I don't think it was either, but...
They were trying to be realistic, but the thing about realism is that...
It sometimes goes in this direction.
Yeah. I do like the fact that they did a lot to try and humanize her, and because, you know, the thing was with the old Tomb Raider games is that, you know, I liked the old Tomb Raider games, but in the Tomb Raider games, she was basically more like a superhero. And there's nothing wrong with superheroes, but, you know, it just, I don't know. I just like the fact they're going a long way to, for one thing, give her more humanity, I guess. Like, they're trying to put forth the reason why she became what she is, and, you know, to become the hard-bitten shell-shocked veteran, you have to kind of go through some shit.
Yeah.
And I also like the fact that they're actually showing that, you know, it's not something that she's simply gotten over, that it's stuff that's still kind of haunting her, and it gives a lot of psychological depth to her character.
Yeah.
And you know, really, it's much closer to Toby Gard's vision than what we got with the old games.
Yeah.
You know, she's a much more human character. Specifically, you know, she's not the over-sexualized stereotype that she was back in the old days, which I like. She's just a better character overall.
And even as someone who doesn't play the games, I find it kind of curious where exactly they're going with this.
Yeah, they're sort of...
I just didn't like on the trailer, like, watch the rise of a legend. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I think that was probably... That was somebody else's doing, I think.
No, it's just the same. It's that same bullshit grab to be cinematic. Like, they might as well have opened up the fucking trailer with, in a world where blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, witness the rise of the Tomb Raider. Fuck off.
Yeah. It was, like, but... I do love the fact that they're making actual Tomb Raiding more of a...
Right? That's cool.
Which, you know, I can kind of understand why they had to do only a little bit in the first game for narrative purposes. And, you know, the tombs we did get in the first game were actually pretty cool. And, you know, it was just, you know, narratively, it was just a better game overall than any of the old Tomb Raider games before it. So, yeah, that's sort of the other thing I'm looking forward to. Obviously, I'm looking forward to Xenoblade, and, you know, Star Fox, I already said about that. I'm not sure about you guys, but I think one of the problems with this year's E3 is that the pre-show kind of blew its wad.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
And I mean, once the Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel was announced, I said on the Day Zero update that I didn't really care if there was an E3. And sure enough, by the time it was all over, that was still my most anticipated game.
Yeah. And obviously...
Yeah, when I watched it, I got disappointed just looking at it when there wasn't a fucking Dragon Quest announcement. Like...
Yeah.
I don't know. I know I sound like a broken damn record. It's just that the what's so interesting to me about this is the seeing the shift that Square Enix is going through, where they're obviously very interested in what their players want and everything else like that. So it's like, why doesn't this matter? Like, I've seen petitions, I've seen people blow the new CEO up on Twitter and everything else like that, and it's just like, and the thing is Dragon Quest, they won't ever give that out to somebody like Falcom or somebody like that, because it's Dragon Quest.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's just, I don't know. I guess I'm at the point, too, where it comes with gaming. Like, I remember back in the day when we didn't get shit. Yeah. That was back in the day. It ain't now.
Yeah.
And there are very few games.
Let's not go back there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are very few games where I feel like we could get back there. And this kind of stuff just proves to me that we were already there. Like, there is an audience for it. It might not be 6 million people, but why?
But they're developing sanity about that at the same time.
Well, but then yeah. The other thing is that you're going to sit here and, you know, all right, you're going to develop a new Nier, but you won't translate Dragon Quest? Like, how the fuck does that work?
Yeah. I did think that was kind of suspect. I mean, a lot of people right? would have like, said that Nier was part of the problem with Square Enix those last few years.
Well, I know Nier is one of those games that a lot of people really like. I've never played it. I'm sure there's things about it that are great. But it just was kind of baffling to me that you would give us a new one of those, but you won't give us a game that's already been made and just needs to be localized. That's crazy to me. But, you know, what the fuck do I know, right?
Watch Nintendo will pick it up and
let me give you.
Well, that was the thing. I was expecting Nintendo to pick it up, if only for the fact that for next quarter, or like January on, they look a bit weaker than they should.
Yeah,
like that's what I was thinking. Like, okay, well, if you're looking at least a little bit weaker than you should, maybe you can use, you can use this,
And it would work like a charm.
Yeah, it would. Because we know the people that are holding on to that system. So, yeah, that just kind of blew my mind. And that is the kind of thing you'd think Nintendo would pick up. But that's the other thing. I think they're completely out of touch. It's the same thing. It's the Bravely Default problem. Like, you guys had no idea that would sell this much here. But
and
it
now
did.
It's all happening again.
Yeah, and it's like, what? Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Just to give you sort of a good idea of what Nier is like, Nier is what would happen if an action RPG was made by Kojima.
Hmm.
Yeah, it has some problems gameplay-wise because there is some backtracking involved, but the thing is, it goes into some crazy directions. Not even a third of the way through the game, it goes into just weird, just bizarre. The way that by the time you're done with it, you're not going to forget about it for a very long time.
Okay.
But really, the one more thing I would say that I'm looking forward to, and even though it wasn't brought up in E3, but I know it's coming out, is Devil's Third.
Mm. That we could have included that on the milk carton last night.
Yeah, the Devil's Third, for those of you who don't know, does have a release date, just not for the U.S. yet. They've got release dates for Japan, the European Union, and Australia, and it's basically it's coming out in August. Probably if we see it here in the U.S., it'll probably be maybe early September.
Yeah, not too far off. If they've localized it for English-speaking countries, then that's pretty telling.
Yeah. This is the hardcore, over-the-top action game that, Tomonobu Itagaki and his Valhalla studios have been working on.
Yeah.
And, if you've played Ninja Gaiden when he was still on that franchise, this dude knows how to make an awesome action game. But that's pretty much how I'm seeing the next year.
Cool.
Yeah, I think we're gonna see more remakes come out too. I think you'll see more HD remasters pop up, and I think it's because a lot of these companies simply are their projects are taking more time. But I'll tell you what, though, to be honest,
as long as they remaster the right things, that could be a good thing.
Yeah, I agree there. The only thing I actually really have a problem with is, like, I was looking at that Gears of War remaster just for the one game. And actually, I really liked Gears of War, but all I could sit there and think of was why.
Yeah, that's what
why
I've
just
thinking.
One game?
Why could they do the
and
whole
that's not even
and-
the weirdest choice. They're doing God of War 3. Not the entire first trilogy, just God of War 3.
Yeah.
What the actual fuck?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Well, didn't they already do an HD remake of the other two games?
Well, no, they did all of
them. They did them on PS3.
Yeah. Well, no, God of War
that,
3
that
was
still
already,
doesn't make sense, though.
PS3 natively, so.
That still doesn't make any sense, though. That's
just
weird.
That's the one they want to preserve.
I guess.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I liked it when it came out, but
God of War 3 was one of those games that started to toe the line for me where I felt like they didn't know what they were doing. Like, it's a phenomenal looking game, but like when they took the violence so over the top, I was just like, really? Like,
it was a game they made because they had to make a game, not because they had an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think might explain why David Jaffe eventually left the whole franchise.
I wouldn't want to be any party to that.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know what I'm talking about, like, where he just twists the guy's head around and rips it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the other part, too, is that Kratos is just not a good person. Like, you're playing the game.
He's not really a good character, to be honest.
Yeah, why am I playing this asshole?
He's a one-note thing. You know, he was fine for the first game, for the first God of War, because, you know, it made sense. But he's been keeping on this pissed off thing for, like, how many, like, six games now?
Yeah. And how much longer are you going to be angry, dipshit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of his only trait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it worked in the context of the first game, and even the second one, but by the end of the third, you think he killed everybody, like,
He killed the entire
mad.
Olympian pantheon.
Yeah, it's like, all right, dude.
Now we're on temper
mad.
Tantrum.
Yeah. Now you're just being kind of a dick.
Yeah, well, what have you got planned to play for the next year or so?
Well, I'll probably, I'll be playing WoW. I plan on definitely putting in time to Batman. I'm hoping, like I said, I'm hoping I see a Dragon Quest game come out, but yeah. I've been working through Fire Emblem again, and I think I will be doing a lot of portable stuff more than console, simply because, my family takes over the TV, and that's fine. I mean, whatever. Mm. But that's the other thing, too, though, is that at least with the portable consoles, I don't have that issue that I had with other stuff where it's like, okay, I want to play this game. I want to play it. I don't want to watch the cutscene that you think that I should be watching. I just want to play the fucking game.
Yeah.
So that's part of the reason why handhelds work so well for me right now. And that's the other reason why I'm pining for something like a Dragon Quest on a handheld, because that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And the ability to just play it and then stop, that makes sense to me.
Just close the system and
have that be that. So, I'm curious to see what they bring out. But that was one of the things I was really looking forward to this E3 to kind of get me, like, show me something that I haven't seen before that is just going to totally blow my mind, that I'm going to be totally into. And I didn't see a thing like that. I saw some applications. Like, I thought HoloLens was super cool. Mm-hmm. It's not something I'll ever own.
Yeah.
And it's not something I'll probably ever use. Very neat, though. But as far as games and stuff that had me just going, holy fucking shit. Like, hell, I'm really looking forward to Fallout 4, but I know I'm not going to pick it up at launch because I'm still trying to finish New Vegas. And I don't know. So I think I'm going to be sticking towards the handhelds, looking for the next Fire Emblem. And I'll tell you what, I'm actually, I don't know much about it, but I just seeing that world of Final Fantasy, I'm really curious what that's about.
I do want to see what they do with that.
And it's going to be on Vita. So I'm like, okay, I'm there. Show me what you got. So
that also,
it's really a shame they didn't show more of that.
Yeah.
The one like new property that they showed that I actually am really excited to play is what was it? Dawn Zero Hour or the Robot Dinosaurs.
That
game.
Oh fuck, it's on the tip of my tongue. Horizon Zero Dawn, I think the name is.
Yeah, or let's see.
I'm just gonna check the show notes. I'm gonna cop out.
Yeah, that's what it is. That actually looked really cool and looked really interesting. That is a game I definitely want to play.
Horizon Zero Dawn.
Fucking robot dinosaurs.
Yeah, and it's getting a lot of hype too.
That you're taking down with a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
It looks cool. It looked cool. But by God, I don't want this to turn into another Watch Dogs fiasco. I don't know. We're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, we really are.
Well,
so I think it's...
Yeah, I think that's going to do it for me, too.
Show.
I do, too.
Yep. Alright. So.
Alright, well, this will be the day that I forever remember because I've been texting suck my balls for the last 20 minutes to my buddy Vinny. So.
Alright.
Yeah, no, that was cool. I'm definitely glad we got to talk about it.
Yeah. And.
Are we gonna see you on the Day Zero update?
No, because Father's Day, and my family is going out of town the very next day, so I'm going to spend as much time as I can with them. Now, if we do something during the week, I should be free, though, and then I'll be going back to Sundays starting next Sunday, unless I get hit by, like, a bus or something.
Okay.
Which, well, honestly, at least I'd get a day off of work, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll still hope that doesn't happen.
That's what we call a silver lining.
Yeah.
Yep.
So. Oh. All right,
okay.
Guys.
And with that, we will see you next week.
Later, everybody.
Peace.